Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, and welcome to A Hungry Society. This is the show where we talk about food, food media, and so much more. Today's show is a little different. It's an interview from the Soul Food Sessions dinner, which was held at the James Beard Foundation House in Manhattan earlier this month. Soul Food Sessions is a great dinner series that started in Charlotte, North Carolina, as a way to acknowledge and support people of color in the culinary arts, restaurant, hospitality, and beverage industries. Chefs Jamie Barnes and Greg Williams of What the Fries Food Truck, Michael Bowling of Hot Box Next Level Kitchen, Gregory and Sabrina Collier of The Yoke, Jamie Turner of Jamie's Cakes and Classes, Justin Hazelton of SB&J Enterprises, and friend of the show Omar Tate were part of the dinner, and each of them made a course for the evening. Well, except for Justin, who handled the drinks. The name of the series hints at what the founders want guests to experience. Dishes that act as an exploration of what we think of as soul food and push the boundaries of that definition. Dishes like pork pate with apple buttermilk and warm farro salad with smoked peaches ask, what is soul food and what isn't? Who cooks it and who doesn't? If a chef is black, is what they're cooking automatically soul food? Before the dinner service, I talked to Gregory and Sabrina Collier about these questions and the challenges of black restaurant ownership. So a little bit about Sabrina and Gregory. They're both Memphis natives, very proud Memphis natives, and they own The Yoke, a breakfast cafe in Charlotte, where they live and serve the community through various volunteer activities. They are also very big proponents of locally sourced food, and they work to ensure urban and rural farmers are supported in their efforts to make a living, continue providing quality products. Just a note, the James Beard House is located next to a daycare, so you might hear children playing in the background or yelling or jumping around. Do not be alarmed. They were not in the house. They were outside on the playground when I went and did the interviews. So you're going to hear that a little bit. And I just want to note that the dinner that happened afterwards that I stayed for was, the room just felt so joyful, and the atmosphere was absolutely incredible because of these chefs and their passion for what they do. So I hope you like these interviews, and I hope you seek out Soul Food Sessions when they come to your town. Thank you so much to the chefs and to the James Beard Foundation for having me. We are here at the James Beard Foundation House in Manhattan, next to a school. So if you hear children yelling, they are at the school next door. They're not in the house.
In the basement.
Right. Under the stairs, no.
And I'm sitting here with Sabrina and Greg Collier, and it smells amazing in this house, and they've been gracious enough to sit down with me before the dinner this evening. So Sabrina and Greg, can you say hi?
Hello, everyone.
What's happening? Thank y'all for having us.
Thank you for coming up here. I've been following y'all for a bit, so it's like it's very nice to meet in person.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Very nice to meet you. We appreciate it.
So, Soul Food Sessions. How do you describe it to people? Like, how do you describe the concept of the dinner series?
I'm gonna give them the spiel, then I'll let you tell them what it really is. So the spiel is, Soul Food Sessions is a collective of black chefs founded to promote minorities in the hospitality industry through recognition and scholarship. So obviously we want to make sure people saw us as black chefs And then from there, we realized we could actually go into culinary schools and provide funds for students and be mentors with them. So that's what Soul Food Sessions is essentially. What's Soul Food Sessions?
What is it really?
How can we really say, or like, do I need to watch, you know, language or?
No, any language is welcome.
It's swear really, honestly, Soul Food Sessions is a fuck you to people that think black chefs can only make like chicken and greens. We love that. We do that. It's in our blood to do that, but it's so much more that a black chef can do in elevated cuisine and mixologists. We're not all just drinking, you know, making Hennessy and strawberry cocktails. It's like, or like chicken and waffles. We do those very well. We do that too, but I feel like Soul Food Sessions is a fuck you to people that don't even give black chefs and black cooking the chance to display those talents on that scale of, you know, casual, semi-casual, fine, like high-end. We're usually lumped into this box of automatic soul food, which is why we named it Soul Food Sessions, because people without looking at the menu would be like, so what are y'all making, macaroni and collards? And so I know, you know, that's why we named it that, to kind of, you know, fuck with people. So when they came and got this high-end and elevated cuisine and high-end service, they were like, oh wow, it wasn't, yeah, it may be a collard green in your dish, but it's completely constructed in a different way than, you know, the ham hock your grandma made. Mm-hmm. So that's what Soul Food Sessions is. Mm-hmm. And in the process, we're reaching back out to other chefs that may not have as much notoriety or may not be getting as much acclaim to say, hey, we're in your city, would you like to hop on? Can we add you to this lineup? Because we already have our core, you know, five chefs, but we always like to, if I'm in your city, I'd love to like have you. We see what you're doing, we appreciate what you're doing, can we have you come do this dinner with us? Which is why we have Chef Omar Tate of Honeysuckle Pop-Up here tonight, so we're excited.
Yes, I was very excited to see him added to the lineup. He's been on the show before, and I've had his food, so.
He's dope.
Very, very excited. So when did you first feel like, you know what, fuck you? Like, in relationship to soul food.
Like, I mean, so it's like, it's easy. I mean, I think it's easy to, first of all, let me step back. It's easy to say, or to take this as a fuck you to soul food, right? A lot of people like, what's wrong with fried chicken? What's wrong with collard greens? What's wrong with mac and cheese? Nothing. They are wonderful and phenomenal, and they are in the pantheon of black cookery, but they aren't the pantheon of black cookery. And I think for me, I had to figure that out, because in my mind, I was like, ain't no way I'm cooking fried chicken. Ain't no way I'm cooking collard greens. As soon as I realized I wanted to be a chef, I thought that I had to say fuck you to all my heritage to go find who I was. But when I got out there, I saw chefs of their heritage cooking their food and being lauded for it. Yeah, it was in Arizona. Yeah, it was Latin American chefs, but I saw them being lauded for it. So for me, the fuck you happened the day I decided to leave Memphis to go to culinary school. Everything about it was a fuck you. I was like, yo, I'm finna go to a city that's not like Memphis, it's not like the South, that's anti everything I grew up with, to go see what it's like to just be able to move with no boxes, no bounds or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that ended up making me realize how important my story was, or how important the history was, or how important the context of Southern food was. You know what I'm saying? So now it's like, I fucking love grits. I don't think nobody can cook better grits than me, like, period. But it took me a long time to get to the place to where I felt like I could even try to embrace that.
And I think, for me, being at the front of the house, because I don't do any of the cooking, being at the front of the house, for me, it was when we do our dinners. When I go out to eat, I've been in the food industry front of the house like 20 years now. When I go out to eat and I go to high-end places or fine dining, because I go on every range, I don't see a lot of people that look like me in the front of the house, especially I might see some serving, but not a lot in like high-end places serving. Definitely not a lot of black women in management. So it was very important for me, being a restaurant owner, making sure I head over the service of it, because I can relay things. I just feel like it's a language that I can speak. I speak to the back of the kitchen that other people can't. You know, I'm a chef whisperer. So, you know,
that's,
I have to.
The chef whisperer.
Yes.
That's what we're going with.
Yes, that's my new. Chef that's whisperer. So I can, you know, I deal with a whole lot of shit, but I think I'm able to relay it to the front really well. And I think a lot of us in the front, black women, don't get a chance to do that in high-end places and dining. So that was a big thing for me, because I can't relay it through cooking because I don't cook, but I can relay it through service and how service flows. Mm-hmm. So that's always been big to me. And the fuck you with the food is the same way my husband said. We're both from Memphis, so we went somewhere opposite. When he went to Arizona, I went with him, and we got to see a different side of, like he said, other cultures were always praised for, you know, displaying their background, whether it be Italian, French, Latin American cuisine, and notice with a white chef, he could cook any style of food. They never look at him and say, what are you cooking, European? He can cook Asian, right. He can cook Chinese, he can cook whatever he wants. He can cook Southern, which is soul food, and be awarded for it. So it was just like, we want Soul Food Sessions. I want it to be that same way for African American and black people that are cooking. We need to be able to cook any type of style dish and not be, we can, but don't box us in. So we hope, with what we've been doing, our mission, we hope that we've even changed. If we changed 10 minds in the way of thinking with that we did what we were supposed to do.
Yeah, I hear you about the fuck you in terms of service. Yeah. So I used to work in restaurants, and, you know, when I moved into management, there weren't other black women in management, many in, like, the restaurant scene. I was living in Boston at the time. Mm-hmm. And there weren't many black people in those fine dining rooms, like, in the seats.
Yep. Right.
So it's, you know, it's very important to me when I write stories, like, I make sure that, you know, I try to remember and center black people in the dining experience, not just serving, yes, or cooking, but also actual diners.
Because, I mean, what did you see? Dishwashers, right? A lot of dishwashers, a lot of cooks, but never exec chefs.
It's not even, the fine dining industry is built so that it continues to make the people it's built for comfortable. Like, they're not, if I own a restaurant and I want to build a fine dining restaurant, I'm going to build it from my center. Mm-hmm. If my center is 38-year-old black man from Memphis, Tennessee, I'm going to build it that way. If I don't get the opportunity to build it for lack of finances, leasing strategies, or whatever the case, right, I'm not going to ever see a space built for me. So when I go into these spaces, they're not built for me. So when I walk in there, I don't feel comfortable, because that's the point of them. They not for me. I can go in and I can eat and I can enjoy the experience, but it's not an experience built for me. So I would almost have to, I won't say betray myself, but I would almost have to look away from who I am to go in a space and try to enjoy that type of space.
You're because adapting. It's always adapting. Yeah. It's always adapting. And for once, I want to go in a space with high-end dining and not have to adapt and just be.
Just be normal.
Just be. I want to experience what white people experience in most high-end places, you know, not having to adapt. Just go in and do whatever. I want to be able to play hip-hop music. Now it's become a thing in the past 10 years where they play high-end and high-end restaurants. They're playing, I mean, fuck you, bitch, all that in the music. Yeah. And this is high-end dining.
And it's a vibe, right?
It's a vibe. We did it. You know, it was hood. So, you know, we've been doing it. You know, it's just, people are comfortable with it now. It's always been a cultural, you know, experience. So that's what Soul Food Sessions was. We wanted to make this just like, look, we want everybody to come, but we just want to show y'all. My whole thing with the soundtrack, even with the music, was this is what we do in the back. And when I go in the back in the kitchens, everywhere I worked, from higher end to casual, the kitchen was playing hip hop and rap, getting that push out. So when we started Soul Food Sessions, I said, this is what I want played up front. This is how, because I want them to be in their element. This is their time to shine. And they always had to play it in the back. It was never in the front. It was classical. That's not who we are. There's elements of it in our music, but that's not who we are. So I wanted to be able to do that, and to be able to do that in James Beard House. Like, think that's dope. Like, this isn't going to be like a regular dinner.
I mean, you see the same thing happening with soul food, with southern food right now, yeah, too, where it's
cool.
It's cool. It's hip. I've noticed lately I like to look at the terms around Southern food and soul food when it's written about. It's it's simple. It's this and this. Like, it's not written about in the same way that Japanese food is or Indian food or you know, it's not seen as complex.
That's what people think about Southern folks. Mm. People think Southern people are simple. What they call you, country dumb? That's what they call them, country dumb. So even our accents and how we talk. We're from Memphis. We got our accents, our drag. People don't, they can kind of, you know, think you're a little slower than everybody else because you're not prim and proper and you're not talking like that. So it's the same thing with the food. And I think people already have that perception. So that's why it's like been really big, I know, for the chefs here to be like, you know, we can go toe-to-toe with you. Yeah, we're country, but we can go toe-to-toe. And
that shit took a long time, too. Like, well, I can't speak for everybody else, but, like, the more Southern food I cook and the more I dig and the more I see how flavors are just like, hey, I'm putting these two things together that don't make sense together. Like, looking at seasonality and looking at how things grow together in the garden or looking at how things were served together in whatever state, or even looking at like maybe a Japanese tomato flavor concept with rice and tomatoes, and then thinking, oh man, that's Japanese in origin, then kind of stepping back and looking at old cookbooks and saying, oh shit, that's Southern as fuck. Like, I didn't
or
even
that's African.
That's not even
or going through and saying, oh, that's an African dish.
Like rice peanuts and tomatoes. Like, normally if you stretch that out and you put rice, peanuts, tomatoes on a dish, you're like, bro, what is that? What kind of flavor profile is that? Like, that's West African. Like, that's specifically West African. And I think lately what's happening is, especially for black cooks, right, we're trying to find who we are. And most of us, as we go back, some go all the way back to West Africa, some going into the Caribbean. Like JJ, he going into the West African Caribbean vibe. Kwame is going specifically West African. He's looking at Nigeria. So I think a lot of chefs are looking at where their story goes. And for me, like, I didn't find as much authenticity in West African specifically. Although I love peanuts, I love tomatoes, I love sweet potatoes, I love those grains. I like the context in which we got it here in the South. So when I'm looking back, I'm always thinking about, what if I got to come here as a slave, no questions asked, and I still learned about corn from the Native Americans, and I still learned about pumpkins and squash and how different techniques are used, fry bread and stuff. How would I cook then? What connections would I be able to make then? What, is elk mine? Because elk seems like it's not mine because it's, that's Native American or that's foraging or whatever, but like, I think we can look at the food of the place where we come from, and most of us come from the South, Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, and we can look at that food and say, okay, we can do whatever we want to do with this, and it's still Southern, and it's still mine, and it's not me taking from anybody else, and that's okay.
Because I know with a lot of us in the South, I mean, everybody knows the history of the South, some of us aren't as fortunate to go back and say, I am West Nigerian. This is my tribe, this is my family. My mother is a, you know, second generation, or a lot of us don't have that. We know we're from Memphis, grandma might be from Mississippi. That's as far back as I can trace back. So I don't get to go and say, oh, my grandfather's Liberian. You know, I don't get to go back and trace, and I didn't grow up with these authentic foods. So you're making your own history. Yep. And I feel like that's what a lot of the chefs with Soul Food Sessions is doing. They're making
I don't know what that was.
They're making their own history, because we don't know, we don't have a trace of our own. So hopefully in, 40, 50 years, someone can go back and we've set the tone for some historical context for our great-grandchildren to say, this is what this is. But right now we're playing with it and making it our own. So,
yeah, I was having a talk with a chef, and she was talking about, she grew up in the Midwest and then moved to California. Mm-hmm. And she was saying black food in California is so interesting because it is mostly Southern and it's soul food, but then there's like this like Latin influence, mm-hmm. and like, the stories of black foodways in America is so often like this kind of migrant story, of like moving to different parts, right? And there's still, I don't think we've quite reached the point where people understand that black food in America is very regional, and so complex, and there's the way that things are cooked in St. Louis is not how things are cooked
catfish
in Charlotte.
Catfish and spaghetti. Same argument we always have. Back home, we eat catfish and spaghetti. That's people ask if spaghetti a side dish. Well, we eat it as an entree. You know, we can get.
It's a side dish. Catfish is the main. Spaghetti is the side. Slaw is the side, and bread is the side.
Spaghetti is
not an entree.
In households, that's the thing. And we're from the same city.
It's not an entree.
We're from the same city, and this is always a debate of how this should be done. Is fish and spaghetti, do they even go together? It's people that don't even eat catfish and spaghetti. So that's what she's saying. It's completely regional.
Yeah.
It's everything we do. And so it's not as big as continent or country-wise, but it's as small as a neighborhood to say.
We always try to find who we are in spaces.
Yes.
Mm. Like, it's always the search of who you are. Like, I had to find who I was in the fine dining spaces as a chef. And I'm going to tell you how crazy this shit is. I was convinced that I had Latin American in me. Convinced. You couldn't have told me no different. I love chilies. I love chocolate. I love mole. Like, I like the flavor ways. And this is before I read Cooking Gene, right? And this is before I'm thinking, oh, well, shit, I need to look at the South different, right? It's before I found Edna Lewis. It's before I fully understood what Leah Chase meant, right? So this is me just, boom, I'm Thomas Keller, Grant Atkins, the people who I see, I'm trying to be like them, so I'm going to try to find my way. And I knew Latin American heritage was it. I was like, yeah, this is it. I know it. I feel it right. So go to Arizona. That was the point. Going to Arizona. Then I see a Latin American chef doing his thing, and I'm like, yeah, see, this is right. I'm supposed to be here. And then I miss the South, go back to the South. But we do the DNA test. When I tell you I was 0% Latin American, and I was really confused. Like, I was sitting there like,
you thought it was a mistake?
I said, you shitting me. Yes. I said, no, it ain't a chili on that thing nowhere. It ain't a jalapeno nowhere on this. I said, I don't believe y'all. And
you thought you were 0.something% jalapeno?
I know I was a piece of chili and a guajillo over there nowhere.
What I
realize now is it wasn't necessarily just me wanting to be that, right? It was me finding myself in those flavor affinities and thinking that the only place they could have possibly come from is Mexico or Latin America. But then, like, going back to the South and being okay with me being Southern and being okay with grits and rice and field peas and collard greens, and not necessarily in the way that they're normally presented, just being okay with that. Reading Cooking Gene, seeing how me as a Southerner goes all the way to Virginia, right, and all the way over to Texas and maybe even to California and the Plains, right? So it's like, oh, well, shit. This is okay for me to like this because this is normal. And then looking at West Africa and Jessica Harris and some of the stories that she does. So, like, when I found people who had already told me what the fuck was going on, I didn't know who they were at first, so I didn't know who I was. And when I found them, I found me. And it was like, okay, boom. Now I'm wearing a shirt to say I am the South because I feel so strongly in being Southern and being Black and being... I don't have to reconcile with the history. I didn't do shit to nobody. Yeah. The fuck I'm trying to reconcile with slavery for? I don't have to reconcile.
A lot of us are just trying to run from slavery history because that's a lot of our history started here in the States. Not our history, but just here in the States. So that's why a lot of us don't like, you know, farming. Like, we want a farm. For we want a 30-seat restaurant on a farm. We're going to live on it. I talked to my peers about it, and it's like, oh, hell no. Because the field just bring back, even though we weren't there, just the mention of a field or any type of field work or anything like that puts us in an uncomfortable space.
Which is wild, because field peas are ours.
Field peas are ours. You know, collard greens.
Field greens
those
are ours.
Those are things that we ate, but I think a lot of us had ran from it. Because when I break it down to people, Greg's mom, our parents are still alive, from Memphis, right? Greg's mom tells us about the White's Only Water Fountain and how she used to spit in it. My mother was just a couple years old when MLK got shot around the corner from her. And my grandmother used to tell me the story. My grandmother was working at the hospital he came into. So a lot of us are just one generation removed. So our parents aren't even completely equipped to teach us about, you know, loving heritage and having these good experiences because they didn't experience them. So now we're trying to go back and say, okay, I know all this was fucked up, but there had to be something good from that. And we're trying to go back and say, okay, grandma had a garden. Grandma used to do this, or even though it wasn't big, or we used to always eat this. I wonder why. It was so much further back than that, but it was one of those things we just tried to run from. We don't want any, you know, we don't even want to hear about this shit no more. We don't want to talk about it. But it's so, it's in us, and there's so many good things. I think we're running from the good stuff too. And so I think that's why, like when Greg was saying, we're going through saying, okay, field peas, that's or African peanuts too. We have that at our restaurant. Like, that was just one of those things. What is it? Tomatoes, peanuts, and...
Tomatoes, peanuts, sweet potatoes. And this, whatever kind of seasoning is, right? But the core is sweet potatoes, rice, peanuts, tomatoes, and collard greens. The fuck's more southern than that? But in the context of that, if I had called that stew a southern stew, people would be like, this ain't southern. What's more southern than sweet potatoes, rice, tomatoes, collard greens, and peanuts? Like, literally nothing, like, other than slavery, literally nothing is more southern than those things together. But I think, and that's the thing too, I think just from like the cook's perspective, right, I'll speak from there, I think we struggle with the notion that we've seen such a singular example of what a chef is over the eras. Like, there's like, okay, Paul Bocuse on the wall, this is a chef. Then you got Daniel Blue, that's a chef. Then you got Thomas Keller, that's a chef. Or you got, you know, Grant Atkins, that's a chef. Like, every era, there's an example of what a chef is, right? So I think now that we're kind of getting shine, and you see cats like JJ and Kwame and Omar, and you just see so many brothers and sisters, Naisha in California, Mashama, we see so many people. I think it's kind of shocking to see that, for one. And not only that, it's like, what am I supposed to do? Like, who am I? Like, am I supposed to be like Mashama? Am I supposed to be like Naisha? Because everybody has their own voice. And I think because it's in the last 3 or 4 years, all these people have just been uplifted, right? And they're like, look at them. So it's kind of for us, and we're looking at them and trying to figure out how we should go. And it's so, it's almost like the soul food box, right? It's kind of inhibiting because we think we got to fit in one of those boxes. And to her point earlier, we can't just be. Like, I think once we're given the room to just be, then it won't be a finding Kwame. Mm-hmm. It'll be 1,000 cats that cook from the place that they're from. And that place could be anywhere from Nigeria to New Jersey. And it'll just be, I'm cooking from here because this is my center, because this is who I am, and this is my story, and everybody will listen.
And it doesn't just have to be one. Yeah. Usually in spaces with minorities, it's always like one person. It's like one at a time. We can only have one at a time. So us having all these different chefs in the group, having women, black women, black men doing different types of cuisines from their interpretations, it's like, it doesn't have to be one. This is like, this is a group. This is a Wu-Tang. Everybody has their own thing, you know?
I thought you said it was 3-6.
Well, we're from Memphis, so it's definitely a 3-6 Mafia and Wu-Tang type group. So that's
what... Did you say Wu-Tang because you're up here?
Yeah, but you know what? They love Jamie and Greg.
Greg was born in New York. Jamie is from VA.
They love Wu-Tang. Yeah. They love Wu-Tang. So, and, you know, and so with us being from Memphis, we love 3-6 Mafia. Just speaking of the collaborations of those groups, people bringing their own strengths and coming together, that's what we wanted this to be. Like, it doesn't have to be one person shining at a time. It can be, you know, it could be black men and women. And like, I think that's why during this time, like you said, it's more Mashama, it's more Kwame. It's like, okay, oh, it's a whole lot of black people that can cook. Yeah, it's so like, many of us.
What you shocked for?
And mixologists like Justin Hazleton, like, is our mixologist, does amazing.
Now, we're so
drinks.
Behind, I think, in that trend. I think like the mixology trend and the front of the house trend. And I don't want to dig too deep, but I think it's easier to, I think, accept black people in leadership positions in the kitchen, because that's kind of what the fuck, you know what I'm saying? That's how what we were doing. Well, we kind of created the culinary industry. But that's the point I'm trying to make. Like, this should be really easy for people to see us in front of the house positions and making drinks too, because the hospitality industry at one point was based on everything that we were doing in our back. It's funny now where you're looking at mixologists and you'll get one in D.C., one in New York, or five in D.C., or five, 10 in New York, or whatever, and none of them be black. Like, even in Atlanta, which was once a black Mecca, you don't see a lot. So, like, when Justin worked with us, and Justin's going to be working with us for a long time with Lee and Louise, too. He's going to run our bar program. So, we're super excited about that. But being able to connect those dots and say, when we be in James Beard, not because we need you to be in James Beard, but because you need to start beginning the conversation about where the black mixologists are. So people, and I hate that fucking question too. You need to start beginning the conversation about showcasing it, right? Mm-hmm. Just be out here, be you, do your thing, and be great. And and be black. Be all those things at the same time, and don't have to fit in the box, don't have to be the only one. We can have 1,000 different mixologists. We can have 1,000 front of the house managers.
Yeah, too. You don't have to like be great and not be you. So that's that's a big thing. You know, sometimes people, I know when I was younger, you feel like you get in spaces where you like, I could be great, but I can't be too black. Mm. I'm in this space, and I'm very fortunate. I think with us starting our business in our 20s, well, I was in my 20s. He was just turned 29, 30. Like being able to be like, I don't have to, and I'm just going to be real, I don't have to code switch. Like, I do what I do regardless of the space I'm in. It don't matter if I'm in James Beard House or if I'm in Fraser Boulevard in Memphis. I'm able to do what I do. I would give the same service. And I think we're not allowed to do that. So that's why, just like, even with the cocktails, man, be great. You can be great. You can do some dope-ass food. We can play our dope-ass music and do some, and people come from other cultures and be like, oh shit, this is amazing. If you just can, it ain't even about changing anybody's mind. It's just about you, me being able to show you what I can do. I don't even care if I change your mind at this point. I feel like we've done what we needed to do. So
I think that's so beautiful, and both of you touched on so many things. Hearst
Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world. Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Linda Liu, and I'm the host of Feast Meets West, the show that celebrates Asian culture through the lens of food here on HRN. Listen to episodes like The Evolution of Chinatown with Num Wah Tea Parlor's Wilson Tang and New York Times' Elaine Chen. Catch our ongoing series, Women in Asian Food, and spotlight episodes with our heroes like Anita Lowe. You can find Feast Meets West wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
You know, I think when you were talking about how there wasn't this exploration of black foodways by mm-hmm. black chefs, and you're talking about, you know, in front of the house, like, you don't see many black people like being mixologists or whatever, I think there's a lot of shame tied to foods that are from slavery or farming or anything like that. I think black people still carry a lot of shame. And this moment in black food is so beautiful because it is like, no, there's no shame in that. Right.
Like he said, we didn't do nothing. Hell, I ain't got no shame. I ain't do nothing.
Where am I running from?
Yeah.
I ain't never whooped nobody. I don't have an ancestral heritage that did the things that most Southerners have. Like, so
it's just like,
I can be, I don't have to be ashamed of the fact that I have ancestors that are slaves, because I also have ancestors that were kings and queens. So the reality is I can choose the pieces of my heritage and my culture that I want to celebrate and that I want to express through myself. And that's okay too. And can't nobody tell me how it should be or how it shouldn't be, because all of it's mine. And every single piece of it.
And it's okay being, my history didn't start with a slave, but part of my history is slavery. But you know what, for me, and I told Greg this the other day, and it sounds really cliche, like we are like the hope and dream of the slave, because they had to go through a whole lot of shit just for us to be able to do what we're doing today.
And so, like, thinking about, like, you know, just even a couple of generations back.
Our grandparents got their ass beat for us to be able to come here and got spit on and had to deal with a whole lot of shit.
Probably right outside this motherfucker.
Yeah, like, his mom couldn't use the water fountain. Like, she couldn't drink out of a water fountain for us to be able to come here. And so that's why I don't feel the need to have to fit into any box, because I've had to fit into that colored only box, that Negro box, that Black only box for a long time. So why would I not? I feel like I would be doing a lot of people in my history a disservice to not do the same thing that they did.
Like, what I look like doing the same thing that my grandfather did. The fuck was he working for? He wasn't working for me to have to go through what he went through. The literal job was to make sure I don't have to go through that. That's the job of your generation, to make sure the next generation don't have to deal with the bullshit that you have to deal with. That is literally your singular job while you're here. If you're here and you focus on that, then you go for it and you good. And you get to, selfishly, right? You get to make sure, if I make sure my grandkids, we ain't got kids, but if I make sure my grandkids don't have to pay for college because they smart enough to understand the scholarship, or we have the financial wherewithal to help them for that, they gonna take care of me because I paid for fucking college for them, and we made sure we took those steps. And then it's like, that's what you're supposed to do. So when they get to level 3 and we start at level 1, the next generation get to level 4 and the next generation get to level 5. If we continue to do that, if we continue to look at our heritage, understand our culture and say, okay, these bad things happen, that's cool. What do I build on? I'm not going to build on the bad. Let me build on the good.
I just don't want, you know, you don't want them to feel it was just for nothing. So, you know, that's the worst thing I could imagine being a parent. You'd be like, I did all this shit for them and they turned out like this.
His dumb ass to be working at 7-Eleven. Do I work this hard for you to work at a gas station?
Especially if they had to do it. So you want to be able, so that's what I feel like with this, is to be like, yes, we love, like I said, we love soul food. I'm going to go get some macaroni from Soul Food Spot when I get back. But what else? They perfected that. What else can we do to display our talents, to say? It's kind of like your parents. It's like that Steph, and what's Steph's daddy name? Steph Curry?
Fucking Dale Curry.
He put it in his son and he made him better than him. So that's like what we're doing with food. Y'all gave us macaroni. Y'all gave us greens. Y'all gave us an awesome foundation to start on. Now I'm about to go and make it. Got to build from it. So I feel like that's what we're doing, even in the service aspect. Like, you got to think, a lot of our mamas, especially grandmas with mammies, they did a lot of front of the house. They clean house. I ain't going to do that. I'll build from it. But they did a whole lot of that so we could be able to excel and do these type of things. So, you know, I don't take it like...
So what is the foundation that y'all are building for, you know, not just your children, but also like future culinary generations, like, man, chefs you may not.
Don't be afraid. I know for me, front of the house, don't be afraid to excel and still be Black. I think it's kind of hard for the front when I'm. Front, I have I train a lot of young Black women to, sometimes it's kind of hard to, with us sometimes having to be on the defense a lot of times, just on day to day, just on living shit, just going walking down the street. I said it's okay to be wrong, it's okay to fix things, you know. So I want them to learn how to be very good in your craft, but you could still be you. I still want them to be them, but I still want them. I think that's something, if I can't do anything else, to teach the gift of service and, you know, pulling back and being able to, I don't even know how to put it into words. You are in management. You get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying. Like, you walk up to a table and you're immediately, like, underestimated. Yes. Like, it's like you aren't a manager. Like, yeah. I had a table say that to me once. Like, you're not a manager.
I'm not the owner. You know, in our first location where we were, that town is majority white, a smaller town. So I had a lot of girls that had been with me 5 years, Caucasian girls been with me. And they couldn't believe that I was the owner over these girls that were white girls or white guys that worked for me. So it was one of those things, you know, it's teaching them to be comfortable. I'm comfortable enough personality-wise in who I am and a strong personality, but I can give you service. I can give you wonderful service and still be, you know, still be me, still, you know, and I want to leave that gift for young minority, especially women, in the front of the house, because I'm seeing a trend of not seeing so many of us in the front. So if I can't do anything else, I want to leave that, just the gift of, you know, serving. You have to serve to lead. So I'm a big firm believer in that, just teaching people it's okay to serve to lead, you know, especially my girls. So
I think the culinary legacy I'm trying to build is, like, take what I'm trying to give you and hone your craft. I got a lot of mentors that don't even know they're my mentors, but I watched them and I saw what they're doing, and I saw how they move, and I saw how they put things together, and I saw how they thought, and I saw how they acted, and I was like, okay, now I know how I am supposed to act as a black chef. And that goes from Joe Randall and Patrick Clark all the way up to Todd Richards and Dwayne Nutter and Keith Rose. Like, so for me, like, I couldn't have got to here without seeing them and following their work and watching how they moved and took the things that they did great and moved forward. Like, I think a lot of young cooks feel like they need to be already. Like, it's like, yo, bro, take your time, hone your craft, and then move. Like, you don't have to feel like you need to move because everybody around you is moving. And I can't, when I was there, Sabrina tell you all the time, I used to come home all the time like, yo, this motherfucker can't cook. Like, I don't even know how he's running a restaurant. He can't work my station. I used to get so upset and so frustrated, but I never stopped honing my craft. If I wasn't in the same place, I didn't stop honing my craft. I moved on and I started trying to get better in the place that I was at. I think a lot of times, a lot of young black cooks kind of, man, whatever, I don't even work for this person anymore. Then they go do catering, or they go do pop-ups, or they go do whatever, and they stop honing their craft. Like, hone your craft. See, look at the mistakes that your predecessors made and try to figure out how to leave those behind and build on the successes. Build on the things that made them better. Like, it's a reason why chefs have $300, $400 knives. It's not because it sounds good. It's because most times those knives stay sharp longer, they work better, they're more durable, and that's a knife that you can have over the course of 10 years. I think a lot of times we see stuff and it's like, I could do it better. You haven't even considered how good this is yet. Mm-hmm. You just imagined that it's a better way because you don't want to take the time to learn the way that the people before you did it. And I think that's a huge issue for me and a disconnect, because culturally we're not taking the things that the people before us gave us and building on it. We just trying to build from scratch all the time.
And I know for me, I just hate to see, it might sound bad, I just hate to see somebody else get, like, I'd be like, damn, they did research on mine. Especially when you see other cultures cooking Southern food. It's not always, now sometimes they gentrifying the food, but sometimes it's they did all this research to really learn the food. And it's just like, you didn't go any further than your grandma. You didn't, like, really do research on, like, how you from Charleston and not really do research on you the poor where the slaves came from. Like, you got your family, your grandma Geechee, she speak Gullah. Like, how could you not go any deeper and try to figure out any more in food and call, you know what I'm saying, call yourself a chef, or be like, why am I not getting it? You got to, like, dig deep. I feel like sometimes we overlook what's so valuable around us. And I say this with love to black people all the time. I be like, we gotta find value and stuff before white people do. I feel like we don't sometimes do it until after they, like, come and get it and be like, oh shit, That's my macaroni. Yeah, it's been your macaroni. You should like that's been yours. Or that rice been yours. Or that Carolina gold rice or those yams been yours. You just didn't go through and like really dig into it and see. Oh, that's a state vegetable.
And value it.
Oh, that's from Africa. Oh, they had yams over there. Oh, yams and sweet potato, two different things. Like it's knowing that research. So I feel like that's what I want us to do more of as far as like in the culinary thing. Like really dig in your stuff and see. It might be you think a freeze cup, something simple. Shit, it might have been something over in Africa that they was making. It wasn't called a freeze cup, but it was something else, and that's why you love it so much. Mm-hmm. And so I want us to do more of that, way more of that.
Is that part of the centering yourself, like where you stand? Is that part of the work? Was that part of the work for both of you, like learn, like valuing
the foods? I think that's for me. It was automatic that there was value in it. Because I'm a Leo, so I value me. Like I'm really okay with who I am, mistakes or whatever. And I think where I am at a place is normally good, right? So for me, it wasn't. Once I figured out who I was and stopped trying to be somebody else, mm-hmm. it was automatic value in it. Cause I was like, well, that means if I'm this. I could be any of this. Like if I'm Joe Randall, I could be Edna Lewis and Joe Randall. I could be Edna Lewis and Leah Chase. I could be Ty Richards and Leah Chase. It's so many people that came before me that I could be like.
Or I could also be me to the epitome of myself. Yeah. Well, you probably can't ever reach your epitome, but I'm just saying I could be me to the best of my ability and use these people as
right.
like the a drawing it's board. So and many, saying
it's so many. So many influences, right, that belong to me as a black cook. Like, literally, all of these things come from me. So it's kind of like, well, shit, I gotta value it. Like, how can I not? Like, it's like looking at a pile of gold and saying, well, I don't want those on top. Give me the two on the bottom, and I'll go ahead and leave.
I want that whole fucking pile.
Like, I want the entire pile, and now I'll figure out what I want to do with it. I might not never see the ones on the bottom, but I got the whole pile, and I can pull from that whole pile whenever I need to. Mm-hmm. So it's not just Africa. It's not just West India. With the West Indies. It's not just the Caribbean. It's not just... South America and Brazil. It's not just the South. It's every fucking where. Like I can dig from any place on the map, but specifically like the South, bro. Like the way they cook beef in Texas and the way they cook beef in the Caribbean are two totally different things. Trying to get from one to the other would take ages,
yeah.
And I can pull from all those places. It's almost like having a cheat code. Figuring out who I am and figuring out that I have all these influences that I can pull from all these places, how could I not value that? Like, it puts me in a space where I could be better than everybody. We're gonna see if that worked. Mm-hmm.
You got 2 minutes.
Okay.
I did want to talk to you about black restaurant ownership.
Okay.
And how important that is to you. Who wants to start?
It's very fulfilling because one thing about not just restaurant ownership, I mean, we love restaurant ownership because it's what we do. I've always been in food. Greg's always been in food. I've always been in the front. I don't have a desire to cook. I love front. I love the service. I love the interaction with people. It's important to me because it's a freedom. It's difficult. It's not easy because... like I said earlier, a lot of our parents, my mom owned the business, but even she didn't know a whole lot because my grandmother, you know, born in the 30s. So we don't have as much of a wealth of knowledge as far as entrepreneurship and how to do these things and things that other people probably had like hundreds of years head start on. We're learning like from scratch. So I love the freedom in that. I hope when doing this, when people ask me, when other entrepreneurs ask me, black, white, whoever, I tell them what I know, because I feel like I wish I had someone tell me, hey, do this the moment you get a business, mm-hmm. the moment, you know, it's important to have this, it's important to know laws, it's important to have an accountant, it's important to know, you know, I always ran from the service standpoint. So I was always in the floor. Owning is different. You have to have a different mindset. It's always on you. even when it's not directly on you, it's always on you. I think restaurant ownership has taught me patience, more patience. Greg will probably disagree, but I feel like I have way more patience. Temperament, like my temperament is so different being from where we're from. In Memphis, you're always aggressive. You're always on the defense. You're always waiting on somebody to try you. So when I had to be forefront and center in restaurant world, you have to shave it. You got to tone this shit down. You got to shave it, you know, because I love doing it, but you got to shave down your temperament. You got to shave down how you react to stuff. And so that's something I'm teaching. That's what I was telling you earlier. It's not always a defense. They're not mad at you. So I think I'm teaching life lessons through passing out pancakes. You know, it's as simple as that. You know, it's not about the food at that moment. It's about how you handle situations. So when I'm done, my life is over, I hope that I taught people some valuable lessons and just in simple service to me. You know, to me it's simple. It can be complex, but it's simple to me. But I hope that I've taught people some lessons, some life lessons, and, you know, just chill out. It'll be fine. So
I think, for me, black restaurant ownership is specifically important for the same reason owning a business in any industry that doesn't have enough diversity in it is important, because we have a direct line to the issue. The issue is most times, one, folks don't get an opportunity, right, on a lower level. And then two, when you're given the opportunities, you're not often viewed with a lens that's clear enough to see you for your work, right? It's always the thing that comes with it, you know what I'm saying? The addition of, she got an attitude, you know, what's wrong with her today? She got an attitude. She's like, nah, like, you just did some fuck shit. I'm irritated with you because of that. I don't have an attitude. Like, I'm not walking around like this because I'm a black woman. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, you can't even voice your opinion in some of those situations, right?
You're not allowed to have a bad
day. So then when you add on, as a black restaurant owner, I could look at you and say, okay, let me step back. I can handle it different because I know that normally your situation is handled in a certain way. If I want to make sure that black chefs are in the industry, I can do what I need to do from dishwasher level and training and helping them understand how to navigate. Like, we have partnerships with Springer Mountain Farms, with Gumbo HQ, CRVA works with us, and the reality is I'm going to make sure that the black cooks and black chefs that work for me right now understand how to navigate those waters.
And building relationships with people. I don't think a lot of us understand the value of building relationships and entrepreneurship. You can be as talented as you want, but you have to build relationships. And so that's why, like he said, when we work with Gumbo Market and we work with Springer Mountain Farms, when we work with CRVA, like, we're building relationships with them, because a lot of these companies want to be more diverse and welcome in more diverse or minority companies. They just don't know how, or we probably just don't have interest. Like, the connection ain't being made. So yes, it's always to me on the majority to reach out to do it, but we just have to know how to connect with them. Because if I don't know they're trying to reach out to me, well, you know, it's always somebody tell somebody. So building relationships, I think a lot of us only know, like, you know, we be like, I'm trying to focus on day to day.
We don't even understand how partnerships could even be valued. Like, we looking at it, oh, you gotta go, I'm good. I got time. No, I'm saying, like we don't necessarily understand how to build relationships when it's not normal. Like, my cousin Joe do this, so, oh yeah, man, just get Joe to do it. Like, that's normal for us, that's regular. So when it's a company, we don't see the value in ourselves that they might see already, right? We don't even know that, like, hey, as a business, this company needs more black chefs as representation for their items, right, or for whatever they use. If I'm already using a company that's not as good quality-wise, why the fuck wouldn't I work with the company who want to be diverse? Like, they're actually looking for people.
But if I don't know the connection. If I already use that company, I better, like, let me build this relationship. Hey, we already love your product.
Yeah.
So it's that connection. Like, it's like y'all are looking for one another in a room with no flashlight. It's once you finally find one another, and you're like, hey, I've been looking for you. Mm-hmm. I think that's what a lot of minority businesses need, just to find
that person. And we're teaching kids that from day one. Like, yep. I'm not in the kitchen. We're not in the kitchen hiding what we're doing. We're telling everybody what's going on. We're like, yo, I'm doing this because of dot, 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 dot. So those things happen. So we allowed to set up those things through this situation. And a reason to hide stuff, and I think as entrepreneurs, Black folks are often afraid to tell people because they feel like, oh man, somebody's gonna take my spot. But for us, I don't feel like we're doing a good enough job if ain't nobody can take my spot. If there's not a chef that could come take my job, I'm fucking up.
You're supposed to do it.
But I also feel like, you know, with food writing, like there aren't a lot of Black food writers, mm-hmm. and right. there are some people who feel like, you know, don't take my spot, or like I need to be getting all these bylines. And it's like,
what we talked about earlier. Right. So you already got one. That's how we needed one, right?
But if you believe that, then you believe you are falling in line with white supremacy because you are acting like there can only be one of us at a time.
Yes. And that's what we're trying to, that's what we're going against. It's multiple. It's in a race, just like in any other race. There's multiple dope Asian chefs that do dope ass food. Never has to be one.
And it ain't fucking egg rolls and sushi all the time. And that's okay.
And it's not egg rolls and sushi. It's in that same soul food talk. That's the same box that we're putting in with soul food. Same thing they do. Oh, you're Italian. What you make spaghetti? Like it's opening, trying to open people's mind to just think different.
At the same time, there is a bit of reverence that an Italian chef has for Italian food because ain't no evil context or negative context associated with the history of that food. Mm-hmm. Spaghetti and meatballs is just love. Yeah. There is no pain associated with spaghetti and meatballs.
No,
there is
no. My parents were immigrants that came here. You know,
we fucking love it.
You know, my parents were immigrants that came here and bust their ass. You know, and so we shouldn't have shame saying, you know, my great great grandparents are slaves came here
and
busted
this country. Yeah, in Louisiana, and I'm from North Louisiana, and I'm Cajun. It's cool.
Yeah.
Like, not just, I am Cajun. I'm from Memphis. Like, almost every time we walk into the room, we tell people we from Memphis. Oh, yeah, man, you know I'm from Memphis. So, yeah. Nobody asked you that. Like, what? We're happy and proud of who we are and what we came from. And
I even think, with the history that comes with Memphis, you know, we're proud to be from there. So, you know, we'll make Memphis proud tonight.
Yeah. I'm excited to eat. This could go on for another 2 hours.
We were telling you, man. Like, we do this, like, we ain't got to
come back. Just have the dinner up here. Just have people come up.
We'll just sit and talk.
Yeah.
People are eating up here. You know that, right? People eating up here.
People are eating up here?
Yeah. We got all.
That's why, the whole.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
You gotta go. It's 4:37.
Oh,
yeah, you got to go.
Thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you and we hope you enjoy.
I appreciate you. Thank you for having
me. This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.